This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A. On the I can speak tonight. On the corner of Trash View and Nata Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Shane and John?
It's working. I can see it.
I can feel it. How are you feeling, Jeremy? You sound pretty good.
I'm not as good as Shane, apparently. He's seeing stuff. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a PIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at PIPCOT.org. So we are back tonight. We are the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy, joined tonight by Shane and John. What's going on, guys?
Hi, everybody.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm all right. Little tired. Been the BIP twins, as they've now been rebranded, here for the weekend. So, you know, they kept me busy out at the pool, at the, you know, local pool with them today, swimming. So I was tired, and then one of them wanted to stay an extra night and hang out with Dad, so I didn't get my nap in either. So I'm a little extra sleepy tonight, but yeah. I think I'll make it through.
I should be a little bit sleepy, but I actually skipped my nap that I usually take before the show because I've been kind of busy today. It's been a long day, actually. Been kind of getting ready for tomorrow's activities, actually. I happen to have some special guests coming tomorrow. Derek Bros and the Conscious Resistance Tour. Well, the Conscious Resistance Network is coming here with their Decentralize Your Life Tour. And it's going to be awesome. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff downtown here in Cincinnati tomorrow. We're starting out at 2 o'clock in Pyatt Park, and we're going to have, an OP Helping Hands event where we're going to be feeding the homeless, and it goes from 2 to 4. And then at 5 o'clock, we move over to, it was going to be a French park, but it's been changed to the Sanctuary, which I believe was originally double booked. There was going to be yoga there, but they've worked it out so that I think we can possibly do both. We might be able to do our guided meditation and yoga together. So that the people who want to do both can do both. And then we're also going to have, let's see here.
Oh, wait, you're gonna, Justin King.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to ask a question. I was going to backtrack a little bit. You said you guys are going to feed the homeless now. Now, of course, as we've spoken about many a time, I'm actually looking to relocate to Ohio, but I don't actually know like the rules and laws and stuff around over there. It's not illegal to do that there. You guys aren't any risk of like going to jail for doing what you're doing.
I don't believe so.
Like in Florida, right?
This is actually a periodic event that a group here called Awakened Cincinnatians actually does every few months or at least once a year. And I know that they don't seem to have any trouble with it. So I believe it's okay here in Ohio to actually feed the homeless. At least legally, it's okay.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we kind of scoff at that. But, you know, those are things you do got to take into consideration, especially because there are places like, you know, like I was, you know, I said it jokingly, but I think it's Florida where that keeps happening,
yeah.
Right? It's that one poor pastor who keeps getting arrested, like these 80-something-year-old guy.
They just passed a law in Philadelphia, too.
And, did they?
Yeah, and Philadelphia is just doing this whole big thing with the homeless. They're also doing this thing where, like, they're discouraging people from giving actual just money to homeless people and saying that you have to do it through this app where you give money to the government and then the government gives money to the people. Like,
I had heard about that, yeah.
Yeah.
So that actually
now there was a similar app made by like independent people where homeless people would put their profiles on there and the money would go directly to the homeless person, and that's pretty cool.
Well, but now that I like, that's more like that. Well, even more direct, but like that Donor C app that you guys know about that one.
No, I haven't heard of that.
What's the guy's name? I think it's Gret Glier. I think the guy's name is. I think he's the guy who created this app. I heard him interviewed a bunch of times on Tom Woods, on one of my favorite podcasts, the ANCAP Barbershop. But anyway, it's basically, it's a direct donation thing where, he was going to put, like, he had traveled, you know, he was a young guy, but he had traveled the world a bunch, and he had been to all these places where, you know, he would see the, you know, either the Red Cross or whoever it was who's supposed to be getting there, getting the aid to these people in these situations, wasn't getting there. And I think he was, I think it was the Haiti situation that he was actually like the first person, like one of the first people on the ground down there, actually getting help to people. And he just realized how inefficient everything else was. So he created this app where you can just like, you know, people, you can put in, you know, you can all around the world, people put in their basically their stories and say, listen, this is what we're dealing with. And this is what we're up against, you know, and it basically just, you know, asking for voluntary donations to help things from anything from like, you know, medical care for children in third world countries to building houses for people. You know, and I'm talking about like, you know, houses that we would think were like, you know, over here would go for a lot of money in those type of places are like ridiculously cheap because of, you know, how things can get done without the government regulation in the way when you're just doing that stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, that I like you were saying, John, that more direct action. I dig that idea.
This technology can be used for good, just not when the government's the middleman.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it is. You know, I used to say that all the time. Government really is. It's like the most inefficient and most tyrannical middleman in the world has ever known, because that's where all it really is. It's just expensive and gets in the way. Yeah. You know, there's, you could really do so much more without it being there and actually get things done. You know, because for all the stops government's supposed to put on itself to, you know, allegedly keep itself in check, all it ends up doing is creates red tape through the bureaucracy that actually slows down any real progress and only allows things to be implemented that the quote unquote powers that be want implemented, you know, nothing that the people actually want.
Yeah, I really That's believe true. the whole checks and balances thing. I don't really buy that was an actual like strategy for creating government. I just think it was a marketing scheme that the aristocrats put up there and said, "Oh, hey, you know, we're putting ourselves in check." You know what I mean?
Oh well, even Benjamin Franklin noticed right off the bat that it allowed for collusion between the branches, like. They pretty much granted almost unlimited power within each branch and expected the branches to keep each other in check. But if there's collusion between them, then it kind of all falls apart.
Wow, I didn't know that he pointed that out. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were some prominent figures that were pretty, you know, pretty opposed to, or at least, you know, raised a lot of flags and were like, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute, guys, you know. Didn't, you know, weren't we just preaching this whole independence thing and freedom thing? Like, wasn't this what we're supposed to be doing? Like, what's all this about? You know?
Yeah. Franklin was not actually invited to the Constitutional Convention. He showed up by surprise and caught them in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And the Constitutional Convention was originally convened.
It was a coup. Let's call it what it was. That thing was a sham. It was a coup.
Well, it turned into that. Yeah, it was supposed to ratify, I think, the Articles of Confederation, and then they drafted the new document.
Yeah, they were supposed to talk about altering it. Like that was the whole. Like yeah. the only reason those people were sent there by their constituencies.
Exactly.
Essentially, yeah. The only reason was to amend the Articles of Confederation.
Right. And the New Jersey delegates, when they got there, they already had replaced the articles with this new document, and they said, "Well, we're not authorized to vote on this." And they turned around and went home. So that's why there's no signatures from New Jersey on the Constitution.
And a lot of other ones put up a fight. Who was it? I think it was Rhode Island was the last one to finally ratify it, and it was like 4 years later, I want to say, maybe 3 or 4 years later, before they finally agreed to ratify the whole thing.
That does sound familiar.
I'm pretty sure it was Rhode Island. Yeah. But yeah, there was a lot of people back then that were putting up, you know, that's why, you know, as I've said before, that's how I that's how I ended up where I am today, was my study of history, because I, you know, I got tipped off years ago about the Whiskey Rebellion, that I should look into that. Somebody just kind of like dropped the name on me. It was like, hey, you should check into this thing. And I was like, oh, I remember hearing about that vaguely, but I don't really remember the story. And then when I read into it, I was like, what in tarnation? You know, this isn't the George Washington I remember hearing about. Exactly. What's going on here? And I start, you know, and then I started getting into stuff like that. And then I went back even further, and I was like, yeah, wait a minute. You know, these articles, they look like they were actually pretty good, you know. And yeah, it wasn't centralized enough. Exactly. That was the beauty of it.
And yeah, basically the Federalists railroaded the Constitution, well, the convention, and rammed the Constitution through. And they did back of the Anti-Federalists.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was going to say too, is the Anti-Federalists. I had never even heard of them. You know, and I went to school, you know, I went to, you know, what were considered good schools wherever I was, you know, and I don't ever remember hearing that term. And then when I found all these guys, and I was like, because, you know, you hear about, obviously, Patrick Henry. You can't go through any, like, history lesson without at least hearing, you know, his, like, snippets of his words, you know, like the give me liberty, give me death thing. But you don't, yeah, I don't remember learning that he was, you know, pretty much in opposition to everything these guys were doing.
Yeah, they didn't tell you all that.
And him and his little clan of people were like standing up, basically saying and writing documents, you know, the Anti-Federalist Papers, as they later became known, that essentially not only refuted the Federalist Papers, but pretty much called everything we see today. As far as government overreach, you know, not the technology, but, you know, with the path that it would be taken, and, you know, their timelines, but it'd been skewed a little bit, but they pretty much called it all.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, this is what's going to happen when you give this type of power to this concentrated power to this small group of men. This is what's going to happen. This is what historically happens. And we're not, you know, we're not going to be any different if we head down this path, what they were basically saying.
Yeah. And Franklin tried to warn us many times, not only after the convention, but also during the convention. He tried to make changes to the Constitution that they wouldn't adopt, probably because they wanted the loopholes, you know, for collusion to be in place.
Yeah, that's why it was written by lawyers, just like all government documents. So it could be legalese vagary and leave it open to quote unquote interpretation later on. But yeah, we'll have to get back to this after we take this trip to the market. Mars.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Woof. So we're back. We were talking when last we left, we were talking about you know, government and how it's been horrible for a very long time. But we actually got to that by interrupting Shane when he was talking about and his adventures. Was it tomorrow, you said, right?
So
we should probably
tomorrow
finish that off and let you give some plugs and stuff.
Okay, so tomorrow in Cincinnati, we have the Conscious Resistance Tour coming to town with the Conscious Resistance Network, I keep doing that, is bringing their Decentralize Your Life Tour. And we're starting off at 2:00.
Yeah, Don might know something about that, right?
Yeah, just a little bit, maybe.
John was originally scheduled to come along on this tour, but he's taking it easy right now because he needs to rest up and get healthy.
Unfortunately, I was struck by cancer and have to deal with that.
But yeah, I was going to say, you big baby blaming cancer. Come on, man. Get out there. I'm just kidding, man.
That's, walk it off.
Yeah, well, exactly. Derek is, rub some dirt on it. Rub some dirt on it.
That'll work.
Yeah.
Well, Derek is hoping to hit the road again next year, so hopefully I'll be able to catch him next time. But instead of interrupting you again, I'll let you finish.
Well, yeah, next year I'm sure we'll have a better idea of what to expect, you know, going into it. And we'll have a better, more solid network, you know, of Freedom Cells in place, you know, that you can hop from, you know, kind of leapfrog from one to the other. So it'll be interesting to see how much more in-depth the tour is next year. But this year, they're going to be here tomorrow. It's going to be Derek Bros, I think Jack Sparrow, and Justin King is going to be here. I'm not sure who all is coming along from the Houston Freethinkers, but they're going to be doing live music and stuff. But it's going to start off at 2 o'clock in Pyatt Park. We're going to feed the homeless, and that goes till 4 o'clock, and then we head on over to the sanctuary at 5 o'clock, which I have the links I can give that have the directions.
Yes, email me those, and I will I'll put them in the show notes tonight.
All right. And so then after that, we're heading to the sanctuary, and Justin King of the Fifth Column has offered a self-defense class. Then as part of the Conscious Resistance Network's Decentralize Your Life Tour, Derek Bros will be speaking on his new book and more, along with a few of their members from the Houston Freethinkers. We will also have Justin King come back to speak at this event as well. And a few awakened Cincinnatians, Carly Malumbi from the Homesteading on the Hill, will speak on urban homesteading. And then for more on the Decentralize Your Life Tour.
Right up my alley.
Yeah. Or for Derek and John's new book, you can go to the ConsciousResistance.com/tour. So, yeah, I mean, I should be way more tired than I am because I've been getting ready for that. They're actually going to be staying at our place tonight in this very room, actually, that I'm speaking from right now.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome. And,
so we actually got the apartment all cleaned up, and we went and got some stuff, you know, for the Helping Hands tomorrow. And I'm really not sure what all to expect after that. But I'm just going to go with the flow, and it's going to hopefully be, you know, a lot of fun all around, and a lot of connection between those in our community. I know there's a lot of actual Cincinnati anarchists and libertarians that are going to be there who I have never actually met in person before. And it's interesting that the Cincinnati area has so many liberty-minded people, you know, to be able to put, you know, at least help out with an event like this when they come to town. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I bet it'll be even bigger and better next year.
You mentioned Freedom Cells. Is that an idea that we talked about on the show yet?
I don't think we've brought that up. Actually.
No, I don't think it's mentioned. Thank you for saying that, John. Because I was going to bring that up and say, you know, before we bury the lead on that, could either of you give a description of that, John? Perhaps, maybe.
I think I'm going to toss it over to John for this one.
Yeah, sure. This is actually a concept that is discussed in, you know, me and Derek's new book, Manifesto of the Free Humans, which he'll be talking about. And it's basically the idea of people actually in your community joining together, learning skills, and, you know, planning for different situations, developing businesses together, just any kind of group that can help each other do things, whether it is in a bad situation or just everyday life. And we derive this from Bob Podolsky, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He came up with a concept called Octologs, which it involved eight people. And his thing was very specific, like, you know, you need eight people to form this group. And we kind of took a little bit more of a decentralized approach, that the group could be as big as or as small as you want. But I hear the music coming in, so I'll explain after the break.
Excellent.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When this final element issues, it's not good learning you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on Jeep, and Bitcoin. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend fan, kind of collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend fan, gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend fan, gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend fan, gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If a real true fiend fan, gotta collect them all.
So we're back, and before we were so rudely interrupted by the market, John was explaining the concept of freedom cells to us and to all of you. So I guess why don't we get back to that, John, and if you don't mind, pick up where you left off, or somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to flip out to my book a little bit and just get some very specific information. And so in the book, it says, freedom cells could be seen as a very specific type of mutual aid group where agorism and counter-economics play a key role. The name comes as a response to state propaganda around terror cells. So we're trying to reclaim that and say that we're freedom cells. And some of the things that freedom cells can actually do is work together to accomplish goals such as every group member having 3 months' worth of storable food, encrypted communication, a bug out plan, and ensuring participants have access to firearms or some form of self-defense and know how to use them safely and proficiently. And now all the while, cell members make themselves readily available to render mutual aid to their cells and to other freedom cells in the area. So as more people are exposed to these ideas and more freedom cells develop in specific areas, they can, form together larger communities. And the whole idea is eventually we hope that these cells can actually get large enough to defend themselves against the state if the state wants to come and, you know, take their children through CPS or come and take their guns or, you know, come and try to collect fines or taxes or things like that.
Well, worms. That all sounds good.
Yeah, that's the eventual end game. Now, of course, that's far off, and that's a drastic application of freedom cells. It can be used just base as a mutual aid organization, but they can eventually grow into a type of mutual defense organization that can actually stand against the state if the idea grows large enough.
Well, I mean, that's something sorry, go ahead, Shane.
Oh, well, as you mentioned that, I was reminded of a Konkin quote where he said that any violent interaction with the state should have to wait until the generation of a private security force is capable of defending you against the state. Basically, any opposition, like any violent opposition to the state, will have to wait until the market generates a protection agency strong enough to defend against that sort of aggression, I guess.
Yeah, and that is actually exactly where we drew that inspiration from. That's awesome that you caught that.
I was looking for the actual quote, just now, but I couldn't find it fast enough.
Yeah, that's awesome that you caught that, because that was one of the main inspirations for us, because it is true what he said, about the fact that, the best way for us to resist the state and really the only way to win on a physical level is to develop, community defense organizations that are strong enough to do it. And, that's obviously something that would take time and planning. Konkin didn't really have a blueprint for that. And what we're trying to do with the Freedom Cells is establish that blueprint.
Right on. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's agorism is one of those things where it gives you an actual tangible solution to how we can win this. Because so many of the things, when you look at the news and you look at, you know, the conspiracies and everything that's going on, it's very discouraging and it makes you feel helpless a lot of times. But when you look into agorism and you look into counter economics and ideas like freedom cells and, you know, what's going on with cryptocurrency and everything, it does give you hope and show you that there's a way out and that, you know, we're actually capable of using the tools at our disposal to build a better world.
Right. Yeah, not only encourages us to be more sustainable on an individual level, but also to reach out and provide the products and services that are needed for the communities to survive that are, like, you know, alternative to the private services that are alternative to the public services that the government has a monopoly on now. If we can get these kind of networks and safety nets in place before there's any sort of collapse, then in the event of a situation like that, it could be a lot more seamless of a transition from one system to the other, which would actually be like a non-system of spontaneous order.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the off-the-grid rhetoric kind of or saying or whatever is really important in all this. And it kind of makes a lot of sense because everything that we live and consume is a grid, whether it's the electricity grid, whether it's the food grid, you know, all these institutions and systems that provide the things that we need, they all come with, you know... They all come with a cost, and, you know, that's kind of the problem. If we're able to provide, you know, goods and services to our community in a much more decentralized fashion where it is off the grid and it is, you know, person to person, peer to peer, you know, then we can eliminate a lot of the problems that we see today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like how... If we can just do this, you know, gradually or incrementally over time, there need not be any sort of like sudden revolution. It can just be a really slow incremental change that we might not realize, you know, until we wake up one day and be like, hey, you know, things are getting better, things are working out. And we might not be able to put our finger on exactly when it happened because it's just kind of a slow transformation. It's a gradual change over time.
Yeah, and I really think that's the best way to do things, but people don't want to hear that. I feel like our world is so impatient and we've been programmed to believe that social change has to come, you know, in a very turbulent and many times violent and quick situation. Even if it's not a revolution, an election, for example, is a very open and shut situation, you know, it's a very quick transition. And I feel like that is what people are geared towards when it comes to political change. When you tell somebody that something might be better 10 years from now, people really don't want to hear that. And when you tell them it'll be better a generation from now, they really, really don't want to hear that because they won't be able to reap the benefits.
Yeah.
And it really just shows you, like, you know, the short-sighted mentality that our culture has. And, you know, we really don't even care about the world that we're leaving behind for our children in a lot of ways.
So many people would fail the marshmallow test these days.
What is the marshmallow test?
You don't know the marshmallow test?
I never heard that.
Ring the lead, Jeremy.
I don't know if that's the official name for it or if there is, but it's like, it's this thing that I've seen, I read a lot about. It's something you can do to children to teach to figure out their capabilities for delayed gratification by basically, you know, putting like, you know, either a marshmallow or something or whatever in front of them. But it was just the thing that I read upon was the marshmallow. And you say, you can have this now, or if you leave it there and don't touch it for whatever amount of time you tell them, we'll put a timer. And if you can wait till the timer goes off, then you get two of them instead. And, you know, you see if the kids can figure out, you know, the idea that, oh, you know, if I wait, I get more, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a cognitive test, I guess. But yeah, they use it on kids. You know, I was trying to get my kids geared towards that. And then, you know, I got overridden a lot by a lot of other family members who just wanted to give them things all the time and blow that whole idea out of the water. I'm like, no, come on.
That's really interesting. I'm surprised I never heard of that before.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that's the official name, but that's how I've always heard it talked about. And yeah, I've read a bunch of different articles and I think a paper or two on it too. But yeah, it's just the, you know, like I said, just the idea of, you know, that's simple, but that's exactly what it's teaching, you know, trying to figure out how they, you know, if they can understand that the idea of delayed gratification, and if it's, you know, they can cognitively recognize, oh, it's worth my while to wait rather than just being, you know, a kid or, you know, a glutton who just, you know, or in general, who just be like, I can't wait, you know.
That's interesting. I wonder if, you know, how much more self-control I might have had that been something that I was brought up with.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I think that that's definitely a profound message to teach people, and it's something that people in our culture definitely do not understand. Everybody is about, you know, instant gratification, instant solutions. And I understand in political situations where you have people suffering and people being oppressed, you know, everyone wants solutions now, but that isn't always possible.
Yeah. Well, of course. Well, most things, solutions to problems are immediate. Like, you know, you can find temporary, you know, band-aids and stuff. You usually can't find solutions to big problems in a hurry like that. It's just in general, political or otherwise, it usually doesn't work like that. You know, usually the bigger the mess, the longer it takes to clean it up type of thing. You know, basic outline of that theory. So
yeah, maybe the reason why we can't fix anything is because everybody's looking for quick solutions and they don't exist.
but it's a balance you got to strike, though, because on one hand, you know, the speed, you know, technology and the speed of technology is a wonderful thing, but on the flip side, it does create that, it helps foster, maybe it doesn't create, but it helps foster that mentality that you're describing, John, that, you know, that the quick fix mentality, because, you know, we live in that world, you know, we live in a Twitter and meme world right now where everything is rapid fire, you know, even down to conversations, they've been cut down largely, you know, to, you know,
JK, LOL.
Exactly. Weird abbreviations and emojis. So, so like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You know, I've said that for a long time. Technology, it's like, you know, it's our great savior and the bane of our existence all at the same time, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because, I guess just like anything else, everything in moderation, right? Because when you take it to these extremes, well, yeah, that's what happens. And, you know, that's something else government helps foster is that idea of one size fits all. It's the same thing with that, you know. I want fast and everything, you know, I want fast and this and that, you know, in these areas. Well, we'll do it in all areas. It's got to go the way it's got to be. And, yeah, man, it doesn't work like that.
Worms.
Well, that was some perfect timing.
Yeah. We'll head to the market and we'll be back after that. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
So In the midst of what you were talking about before in the last segment, John, you mentioned cryptocurrencies at one point, and I know Michael sent us a story along, or he at least tagged us on a Facebook post that he was very emphatically suggesting that we put this in the show notes. But it was actually, you know, it's talking about how central bankers, you know, the headline is just, I mean, it's not exactly true, but close enough. For the Wall Street Journal, which actually the article was relatively kind towards the blockchain technology in general, which I'm not used to seeing from mainstream sources, I guess, just yet. But the headline of this was the central banker's bold new idea, print Bitcoins. So yeah, they're basically talking about, I think it came up in one of the central banks in England first. There's actually a white paper written by them as far back as 2012. I think I saw one of them is written talking about shifting things to a digital, you know, shifting the central banks to this type of stuff to a digital currency instead. Just getting rid of the paper dollars or pounds or whatever it is altogether. And that you know, if they keep with their current model, I can't imagine there'd be any problems with that, right? You know, unlimited supplies, right. And
I imagine something almost like the fiat just without the paper. And then you could just have an infinite number of, you know, digital ones and zeros that you could inflate infinitely and not have to actually bother with printing it on the paper at all.
Would they be using the blockchain technology, or would they just be printing a digital currency or distributing a digital
currency? No, they're talking about making use of the blockchain technology, I think.
But it would be something different than Bitcoin. It would be like your own altcoin, essentially.
Of course. Yeah, but it would be, you know, it would be controlled by them, which is another issue,
right?
Because it would, you know, there would be a very centralized power. My first thought in either case, whether it is an actual alt, you know, whether it is an actual altcoin or whether it's just some digital currency, you know, whether it's some kind of other form of digital currency and not necessarily a blockchain technology. In either case, if it's in the control of a central bank, which is often, you know, run or works hand in hand with whatever government is in the location that the central bank is, you know,
right.
As long as it's in that type of, has that type of control over it, it can easily just be shut off, you know, they can just refuse you access to it at any point in time. Whereas, you know, the Bitcoin blockchain or like any of the other, the other cryptos that are out there, you know, not really so easy to shut those things down.
Right.
Because that's kind of the point. They're supposed to be decentralized.
Yeah. I can't imagine how a more centralized version of a blockchain currency would work. It's kind of hard for me to imagine.
Well, yeah, it's obvious that they're trying to swoop in and kind of steal the thunder of what's going on with cryptocurrency, or at least co-opt it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're already trying to co-opt it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they're trying to, you know, they're either trying to break in, or they're trying to shut it down, or they're trying to regulate it, or they're trying to figure out what they can do with it. And now
I think they're trying to clone it, basically.
Yeah, and the banks are, you know, the banks are finally, you know, they had to have seen the writing on the wall with all this stuff, because that actually ties to the other thing before I even saw that Michael posted this, that I just wanted to talk, you know, mention at least in general. It's like, you know, Bitcoin, by the way, currently up over $4,000, I believe.
Woohoo.
broke another so-called barrier over the past couple of days. And is now trading at what, over three times what gold is currently valued at? Because gold's still hovering around 1,200 somewhere in that neighborhood. And you know, whether it's a bubble or not, it's one heck of a ride. And I am sure I'm glad to be a part of it. But you know, government getting involved, you know, central banks tied to governments—that's inevitable. So them getting involved can only make it worse. So I don't even want to think about stuff like that. definitely not going to be investing in Fedcoin. I don't know about you guys. But...
Fedcoin.
Nope, definitely not.
On that note, we're going to head to the market, and we'll be back in the second hour.
Spend your Fedcoin.
Just say no. Farms.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Who's got an intro?
I guess I can do the intro. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Teaching Hospital. Broadcasting through
hospice.
The Libertarian Re-Education
Teaching
Center.
Teaching hospice, man.
Oh, we've been
teaching
downgraded
like,
again, darn it.
I feel like I'm in the teaching hospice tonight.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LitPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org.
Worms! And, right. It's Michael Dean. Michael W. Dean.
Woohoo!
Proof of life segment again, once a week, maybe one segment.
He lives
till I get better. Yeah. Hey, John, how are you feeling with your cancer? Are you good?
Oh, we lost John again.
Oh,
so
that's probably in bad taste. But I think John's feeling better than I am, and he has cancer. So
well, he was sounding better than you. So.
Do I? Yeah, I sound a little better.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I'm watching Better Call Saul again all the way through. It's great. I
still haven't finished this season. Oh, I watched the first six or seven episodes,
man.
And I didn't. I have them. Of course, I downloaded them completely legally. But I have them somewhere,
yeah.
And I have not. I still haven't watched the last three. I got to get around to doing that. Thank you for reminding me.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But I was watching it, like, you know, the first time I watched it through. When it first started a few years ago, I was like, I related with Saul, of course. This time watching it through, like, I'm relating with Mike. Or maybe the folks in the old folks home that Saul's representing.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, see, if I started over again, I would just have a new appreciation because now I've watched Breaking Bad. Because remember when I started, I hadn't watched Breaking Bad at all. I just started with Better Call Saul. Now if I go back, I've actually watched that, so...
I was nervous when they said they were doing a spinoff about Saul. I was like, oh, man, Breaking Bad was so good. This is going to be lame.
But Bob Odenkirk is so good, too.
What is so good?
I said Bob Odenkirk is just so good, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of surprising because I never really loved, like, you know, Mr. Show or anything.
I didn't either. I just always liked him.
Yeah, that other guy I can do without, unless he's...
Exactly, David
Tobias,
Cross.
Tobias Funke. I like him as Tobias Funke on Arrested Development. Hey, I want to welcome Belfouche. Oh, wait, never mind.
Yeah, wait a minute. Did we do something bad?
Lou did. Lou said the word cop.
So that actually got us timed out? I didn't realize that. I thought you were kidding about that part. Oh, wow.
Well, we've never got a timeout. I'm kind of like psyched that it wasn't a boot.
A boot.
Yeah.
What are you, Canadian now?
So they like us. What are you going on a boot? So we'll talk about Fedcoin later. I used to live in Charlottesville, Virginia. And, you know, the real good that's come out of this, everything that's happened this week in Charlottesville, Virginia is when I lived in Charlottesville in the early 80s and played in a punk rock band called the Beef People. I'll send that to you to put in the show notes. And a weird post-punk band called Baby Opaque before I moved to San Francisco and started the band Bomb. I was into B-bands. B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B. I would tell people, you know, I'd call into book shows or whatever, telling my old friends what I was up to, writing letters, paper snail mail letters back then, or making long-distance phone calls that cost money back then. They'd be like, what are you up to? And I'm like, yeah, I'm living in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then I'm like, that's Carolina, because everyone's heard of Charlotte. No one's heard of Charlottesville, Virginia. And everyone just makes the mistake. Even when they tried to false flag and make it look like people were paid to be agitators and put an ad on Craigslist.
Oh, yeah. That
somebody
was...
messed it up and said,
Charlotte.
You know, people need it in Charlotte. So I think after this week, when I say I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia, they won't mess it up. They'll remember it. These guys, this put it on the map.
Yeah.
Finally.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think slave owner and liberty lover Thomas Jefferson probably put it on the map first. Ooh, too soon.
See, now that's funny. That's actually something I was going to bring up, too, because this whole thing, because you actually, you know, we jumped right into this. And for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, I don't know how you could miss this one. Even somebody, me, who doesn't pay attention to the news knows about this stuff. What's actually going on in Charlottesville? It all started because, you know, they're going to try to take down one of these statues, you know, another one of these statues, this one of Robert E. Lee. That's what caused this whole thing, because there was, you know, they're trying to take this down. So the Richard Spencer and his crew, and then a bunch of other people got together and created this Unite the Right rally, where they all went down there. And of course, they were met by the Antifa people and SJWs and
Antifa,
whatever.
Make it sound like a diet soda.
Antifa, there you go. Okay.
Like an expensive yogurt. Antifa.
Sorry, Antifa. And
that's how I've heard it. I like it better.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways.
Sounds fruitier.
It's kind of like data and data with me. I say it both ways. Like I switch between.
Yeah, they're both correct.
I know,
they're
but
both
I
equally
I,
incorrect. Equally incorrect.
Exactly, and I switch between both of them without even thinking about it. I don't have. There's no rhyme or reason.
Hey, you're fluid.
Yeah, man.
Fluid.
I'm get with it, man. I'm like
your grammar fluid.
I'm hipper. I'm hip, man. But anyway, so yeah, so that's how this whole thing started.
So there's a chunk of metal they wanted to move and make into other chunks of metal, and
yeah,
people got killed over it because, you know.
Well, yeah. So yeah, exactly. So well, three people ended up dying so far, as far as I know. Although two of them,
the helicopter thing was bizarre, and that's being blamed on the alt-right.
I know.
And, like, isn't that ridiculous?
Exactly. That was my first thought.
Come on, mainstream media. Don't make me defend the alt-right. That's how ridiculous the mainstream media is being. I'll say this, though. This is going to go in out-of-context fiends. And part of this, I think they're all absurd. I think the Black Lives Matter is absurd.
If you give the disclaimer ahead of time, does it really actually...
No, because they're going to leave. They're going to cut the disclaimer out and just quote this part coming up. If you made a bullet point of, like, 100 bullet points of what the alt-right believe and 100 points of what, you know, black liberal lesbian left-handed, you know, Lithuanian people on who can't breathe without an oxygen tank because they're crippled feminists.
Well, if you want to finish, let's put a laid up, because that'll just finish the alliteration.
Okay, so if you wanted to have the lesbians versus the Nazis or the commies versus Nazis, how's that? That's succinct. So if you want to, and I know that that's broad strokes, but it's like, I'm gonna paint these people.
It's an oversimplification.
Because they're all collectivists, and the thing is called Unite the Right. So I'm going to paint them with one brush. They're asking for it the way they're dressed. Unite the Right. So if you, here's the part that's going to get me hated by both sides. If you had like 100 bullet, like 10 bullet points of what the alt-right believe and what the commie left, you know, social justice warriors believe, I probably would agree with more things on the alt-right side. How about you guys?
See,
you don't want to say it. You don't even want to say it on record.
It's not even on record. I'd really have to look, because I actually don't even know anymore. Would either of them really actually say that, what actually they claim to believe? Or what?
I don't even know anymore.
I think both sides claim to be anti-authoritarian, but yet they divide into this whole like left-right false dichotomy thing and go about, you know, fighting each other in very authoritarian ways. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seems.
I guess the one thing that I would agree with is that I think there is a systematic. I would agree with the alt-right on is I think there's a systematic socialist-based, communist-based agenda-based white, you know, change history. And not necessarily, I don't necessarily make it a racial thing. I make it a, like, maybe a European thing, or more widely, even a producers versus takers thing, or, you know, they want, to us libertarians are, like, to social justice warriors, libertarians are almost as bad as alt-right, especially since a lot of, I saw several poll quotes in the mainstream media of either they made up or they found alt-righters of the hundreds of people they interviewed. They found the two who said, yeah, I used to be a libertarian, because, you know, most libertarians are white men. And that's the quote they use. But, you know, I think that there is a systemic from every level of academia through the justice system, through, you know, the way that things are arranged on shelves in stores. I think that there's a not necessarily a vast global conspiracy. I don't think it's limited to Jewish people. I think that there's a conspiracy of a tide of emotion and thought to, like, punish anyone who's white, male, middle-aged, or older, not in favor of social justice, wants to be left alone, wants to carry guns, wants to keep more of their money, wants to set their own agenda, doesn't want to provide for the collective good. Like, that, I agree with those things. Most people on the alt-right are those things. I want to keep more of my money. I want to make my own agenda. I don't want to provide for the common good. I want to be left alone. I want to be able to protect myself and my family and my possessions, etc. You know, and that is common sense. Most people on the alt-right believe that to some extent. I mean, they want to protect it with, like, Trump, who's basically thrown them under the bus anyway since day one of the election. But, yeah, man, I don't know. Social justice, I'm not picking sides. I'm just saying, like, you know, I tried to explain it to a relative of mine who's like, why is this happening? Like, you know, I'm in touch with the youth of today or something. My relatives are 70 are asking me because I'm 53, and I know what the youths think. But, you know, I mean, this sounds cheesy, but it's like, I saw some meme going around. This kind of sums it up. Like, or like the racial component of it, or the socialism expressed through the racial quotient of it. Like, you know, black parade, heroes, gay parade, heroes, transgender parade, heroes, women's parade, heroes, black parade, Mexican parade, heroes, you know, white parade, terrorists, you know, and then it doesn't help that somebody drove a car into somebody. But I will also say that I spent the whole day from the time I got up watching, like, live streams from the left and from the right. Like, I saw when Baked Alaska got sprayed in the face. I saw that live when it happened. I saw a bunch of stuff that was on the news later, like, when it happened, watching hours of stuff. And what I saw a lot of, including the night before, was the people on the right being like, leave us alone, get away from us, when social justice warriors would get in their face and not hitting the social justice warriors. And then social justice warriors would shove the alt-right would fight back. It was all started. All of the violence I saw, except the car crash, was started by the alt-white, like, or by the, no, I'm sorry, by the social justice warriors. Like, I saw dozens and scores of events like that. So they were there to pick fights, and they were there to have a war. And I'm sorry someone got killed, but, you know, you go to a war zone where both people are saying, we're going to kill you, to the other side. You should expect to be, it's possible. Yeah, I wouldn't have been anywhere near that, man.
Yeah,
I didn't think they were going to actually do it.
Do what? Kill somebody?
Actually kill somebody.
They didn't. One guy did.
Yeah.
Warrors. Although, you know, I don't know.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny.
DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT. .org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. This says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Meow, meow.
Oh. And we're back. And, apparently we're going to play musical host this hour. Michael has left us again, and John has returned. So, Michael Michael swooped in and gave one heck of a powerful rant about the whole Charlottesville situation.
I'm sorry I missed it.
Yeah, it was great. You'll have to listen to the replay and catch it tomorrow. But yeah, I mean the whole situation is Michael was saying for John, since you missed it, basically what he was saying is that if he had to look at the where both sides are coming from, he would have to say that he aligns more with the what the alt right professes to believe and want, overall, versus the other side, Antifa and the SJWs and those crazy people. I don't know about that. Probably. I mean, what they claim to be about, because they allege to be about, libertarian-esque things like private property and all that stuff. I don't think they're really serious about it, because most of them seem to be pretty hardcore socialists.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, I have a strong... I'm so confused by this situation, because I have a strong disagreement with both sides. And
me as well.
Same here.
And it's really hard to even, because the alt-right, they have some really, really nasty rhetoric, but they don't really at least until today, they haven't had as much force behind it. And Antifa has, more friendly rhetoric, but, in the past, they tend to be more forceful. But now, this whole situation this weekend has kind of changed the dynamic.
Well, that was the other thing Michael was saying, though, too, that, he watched a lot of the live streaming. He watched a lot of it on live stream. So he saw, stuff happening in real time. And, he was saying, at least in his viewing, the overwhelming majority of incidents that he saw on these live streams was the left instigating these incidents. Yeah.
Where it seems like the right was trying to have their party, and then the left was the party crashers in this case.
Yeah, the alt-right people were protesting and saying, get out of our faces, leave us alone, and they kept, they basically kept pushing them, literally shoving them and instigating them into the fights that would end.
Michael says Antifa is Mother Teresa meets Joseph Stalin.
There you go. So yeah, it's I stay out of it, because I do have such strong opinion differences with both sides, and I really don't overall I don't really I was starting to take the opinion why can't we just let them kill each other off, I'm kind of cool with that, and then it actually started happening. There's one woman lost her life because somebody went speeding through.
At least one, perhaps. I'm not sure about that, but at least one lost their life.
Well, as far as I know, only three people have died so far, but two of those people, I believe, were the police officers that died in the helicopter that crashed.
Right. Which, as far as I know, is unrelated, but the media is trying to make it seem otherwise.
Well, as far as I know, they were supposedly, doing crowd control or whatever, at least... but even still, I think they were trying to blame it on the alt-right, they shot them down or something. that one I have even a harder time having sympathy for, because, it was two police officers.
They're not people. Yeah. It's not like they're people that die.
But I do have disagreements with both sides.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and, it is kind of a false dichotomy, although overall the left tends to stand for social freedoms but economic controls, and the right tends to stand for economic freedoms but social controls. And that's why I have disagreements with both of those, because I prefer economic freedoms and social freedoms hand in hand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the problem with a lot of this...
You can't have that, you hippie.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we both see both sides as our enemies. And as you said a minute ago, we would think, why not let them kill each other off? But first off, as you mentioned, there are just confused people with relatively bad ideas in a lot of situations who end up getting hurt. Like this girl, who ended up dying. She was pregnant and stuff like that. And then the other issue you have. Official issue is that When these incidences happen, they create more extreme people on both sides.
Worms.
Yeah, man.
And with that, we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
So we're back, and we're talking about this whole situation in Charlottesville, yeah, and I guess what it means and what how it looks to us at least. And I don't know. I mean, there's so much craziness. I mean, aside from this, you know, this poor woman. I mean, it's unfortunate. It's horrible too. But the fact that I've seen so many people just cheering this woman's death. You know, that's just pretty vile in my opinion. Especially some of the people I saw cheering it was made even worse by the fact that, you know, with the way the news cycle works and the way these stories get churned out and just information just goes flying out there. You know, first there was the fact that the wrong person was targeted as the alleged driver.
Oh, yeah.
And it was this guy who was like, wasn't even there. And like, he was like, I saw like things from his Facebook walls. Like I'm in this, like, I'm totally like, you know, however many states away or whatever, like, this is me right now. Like, I'm not, I don't even live there. Like, what the heck?
Didn't he turn out to be the previous owner of the car?
I think that's what it was. Yeah. But it's like, they're just like, you know, people just grab things and run with it. And like, you know, that guy's lucky nothing happened to him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody showing up at his doorstep.
Doxing is doxingly irresponsible. You never know what could happen.
No. You don't have to tell me. I was the victim of that earlier this year.
oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so... But yeah, so... It started with that, and then the stories were flying out. Like, I saw so many stories flying back and forth about, you know, the alleged, you know, identity of the driver of this vehicle. And first, all the like the alt-right news sources and basically anything on the right that I was seeing were mostly claiming that it was like some leftist, you know, their normal refrain. But of course, it actually was like, oh, it was a commie, and they ran over their own. How great is this? And then when they found out it was one of theirs, they changed their tune to, you know, championing the guy, because for them it didn't matter. All that mattered was a commie died.
Like, I can't believe that's what mattered to them. Like, that's what they get, like, out of that.
What, you know, somebody, you know, the former he who cannot be named, who I just don't feel like giving any airtime to, so I won't say his name. But by saying that, people will know who I'm referring to. He was one of those people. He was one of those people who was out there, and saying that, like, first that was his first reaction was, you know, Oh, great, they're eating their own, basically. This is hysterical. And then when he found out it was actually one of his own, then he was like, oh, this guy's a hero, basically. You know, like...
He is such a disgusting person. I really get enjoyment out of watching those pictures with him, you know, crying on the ground.
Oh, yeah, I may have made a meme or two about those. But they... he's horrible, but it's not just him. He just epitomizes a lot of what's wrong with that whole movement, and just these people.
He's
that are
probably one of the only of them guys that I've met personally, so it's like, it's kind of weird, you know what I mean?
Oh, you've met him.
Oh, yeah, a couple times, unfortunately, yeah.
Ah, okay.
See, that's funny. I never thought about that before, but yeah, he's probably the only one I've met, too, because I've also met him a couple of, and hung out with him for a little bit on a couple of occasions. Because he used to be, you know, he was before he moved up to New Hampshire, he was my neck of the woods over here in Long Island. So...
Yeah, and he was working with Adam versus the Man when my friend was living in his house. So I ran into him a couple times over there.
Yeah, but like I said, it's not, you know, there's a lot like him, unfortunately. And it's just that prevailing attitude that, you know, they take pleasure in this violence. Like, they're the ones who, you know, make those helicopter jokes, but like really want to see this stuff happen. You know, usually it won't be at their hands, of course. But they'll cheer when anybody else does it, you know?
Yeah. And they say that the helicopter thing is just a funny gag, but obviously you're laughing at real deaths that have taken place.
Yeah. And, you know, and where does that, like, you know, and, you know, how does, especially people like, you know, like him or other people like that are supposedly are about freedom, but have just aligned themselves with certain individuals for the time being, of course, for the sake of convenience and pragmatism. You know, like, what is that actually really gaining you when things like this happen? That's right. You know, all this does is increases the police state. How is that good for anybody?
Michael wanted to clarify that helicopter rides actually don't have anything to do with the cops who died, because it's kind of, we're kind of burying the lead there when we talk about helicopter rides, I guess.
Oh, I was, yeah, that was, sorry.
Is that too inside baseball?
I didn't think so. I thought we'd make mention
perhaps,
of it.
Perhaps, I don't know, because we're on the radio, and as Michael likes to say, you know, this is Grandpa's internet, so maybe not everybody out there listening on the radio knows exactly, you know, what we're dealing with here when it comes to the alt-right versus Antifa and what helicopter rides actually means.
Well, for a quick know your meme description... I'll just say that one of the running jokes with the alt-right has been about the Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet, who threw, I guess, communists, but any kind of political enemies out of helicopters and, you know, very, very brutally killed them. And, you know, they make jokes and memes about this all the time, and it's one of their big things.
Yes, thank you, John. that wasn't related to the, yes, as Michael is correct, that wasn't related, because I think that's why he's saying it even more so, because we did mention that earlier, that that two cops had died in a helicopter accident that was supposedly somehow connected to this whole event.
Yeah, that's pure irony.
Yeah. Not the same thing when I made that second reference.
Insane. But yeah, I mean, it is a really confusing situation for people like us, especially like freedom-oriented people, seeing these individuals tear each other apart who are all wrong in different ways. You know, it's a terrible time.
Yeah, it's not pretty. And, you know, like I said, my biggest concern is, you know, what's the end game here? Because, like, you know, you think... If you anybody who thinks they're going to, you know, vanquish their political enemies like this, it's like, great. Well, what's the plan after that? You know, is anybody going to be more free? No, I don't think so. So what did this actually get other than like a momentary satisfaction of actually being able to, you know, punch a commie, I guess, or punch a Nazi, you know, from the other side.
Yeah, not to mention, I really don't think you could take down an ideology through taking down people. In fact, I think that you embolden ideologies from attacking people. You know, if you're going to go after your political enemies with force, you're going to A, make them believe what they, you know, believe stronger, and you're going to make martyrs out of them and create new followers. And I see that happening on both ends with this situation. There's more extreme leftists, there's more extreme alt-righters.
Right. And the more extreme, the more extreme they get, the more polarized they're going to be. And the more polarized they get, like, the more they, like, kind of square off into this whole left versus right thing. And all it does is make supposed anti-authoritarians more authoritarian themselves.
Exactly. And it is kind of alarming that we see events like this popping up all over the country. I see there's a big rally planned in Texas. There's another permit that they filed for in Virginia. So, I mean, this is going to be a regular thing. And these are basically planned race riots. Like, you know, they're not essentially... I know that there was a Confederate statue at the center of this, but they're not really protesting that. These people are going into battle. I mean, they're going there with swords and shields. And
it's live-action role-play LARPing.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, you know, they I mean, some of them may believe that they're you know, that they're taking the stand, you know, for the you know, for these alleged reasons. But yeah, in the end, you're right. It's not. It's an excuse. It's just an excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Because so many. I mean, you see what happened. You know, when it started out. I guess the Berkeley stuff was the beginning of it. But I mean, and this is far from the end too, because, you know, suppose, you know, all the politicians are up and, you know, supposedly denouncing this. And then I saw Trump supposedly had to say something about it twice because he denounced the actions, but didn't specify white supremacists. So a lot of people got really upset about that and like demanded that he actually specify white supremacists are the problem here.
There was another double tweet I saw from him, which was actually very telling. So it was the cops that died in the helicopter crash, as far as I understand it, in the chronology, that helicopter crashed pretty far after the news of the girl dying reached the media. So Trump posted about, like, the my condolences to the cops that died, never said anything about the people that were mowed down, and then had to go back to his Twitter and say, oh, my condolences to the protesters that got mowed down.
Oh.
So it's obviously, you know, Blue Lives Matter.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I mean, like, whether they're denouncing it or not, I don't really care. But it's just... everybody else is, you know, it's having the desired effect, which, you know, I think is at the heart of all this, is just, you know, the continued, you know, divide and conquer, because it works so well.
Right.
And, you know, my thought is, you know, you talk about like oversimplifications and stuff. I think we mentioned that a little earlier before, but, you know, if you want to look at this in the most general terms, you know, like Michael was saying earlier, you know, you got like, you know, Nazis and the commies basically. And my first thought was earlier today, and I was actually trying to make a meme out of it really quick, and then I got busy with my kids and totally forgot about it, was just the fact that, you know, people just don't understand and don't learn from history. Because it's like, you know, the first time I started seeing all this stuff and the, you know, the thoughts of like the commies and the Nazis came to mind, I was like, I've seen this before. It doesn't really work out for either. Well, it works out really well for the commies if they have if they have a bunch of other people backing them. But overall, it doesn't work out well for both either side. You know,
exactly.
You know, we're gonna stop communism with fascism. No, it doesn't work like that. But they're gonna try it again anyway.
Yep. But Nazis versus commies is the new LARPing.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
How about a warning? You're about to share what my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, thinks about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare-naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon.
And we're back. All right. Good final segment. I think you had something from Michael you were supposed to...
Yeah, during the break, right? During the break, we were chatting in Fiend Phone, and Michael mentioned how his rant earlier will probably have the left saying that he's an alt-right, but then the alt-right will still think that it's cucky because it's not far enough. You just can't win in this. And I kind of agree. It's, you know, like once each side is so extreme that if you're not as extreme as them, then they're going to consider you to be with the other side. It's like if you're to the left of Pinochet, then you're a commie. And if you're to the right of Stalin, then you're a fascist.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it seems to be working.
And, another quick point. He watched a lot of live streaming that day. To him, it looked like the riot police pushed them all together in one small space, kettling, as it's called.
I would not be surprised if they...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Well, yeah,
because... if they kind of railroaded them all into, you know, tight spaces and then, you know, pushed them together, then you're kind of like, you know, setting a powder keg for, like, you know, instigation to kind of escalate.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would kind of fit with all the other, because all the other reports that I saw were basically that, you know, they were just the cops were just standing by and not doing anything when all the violence actually was kicking off. Like, they were just basically standing back and letting it happen. So that would, you know, that would actually play right into that theory.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing, you know, which, you know, like I said earlier, part of me is like, yeah, let them destroy each other, you know, that, makes my life easier, but it really doesn't though. Cause again, either way, like once the violence starts occurring in these situations, I don't think it really matters in the end who started what, who's more responsible. Cause the result is just going to be, you know, harsher situations for all of us.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, on that point you made earlier about the cops doing nothing, I saw a funny meme today that said something like, oh, you want to abolish cops? Well, what are you going to do when someone runs over a bunch of people and you need someone to not stop it, not help, and then crash a helicopter into the woods?
Oh, ouch. Man. Well,
too soon?
Never too soon in the meme-iverse as far as I'm concerned.
It
but
is.
Yeah, it's not really wrong.
But they didn't really do much to help anything or to, you know,
well, exactly,
to quell the situation.
So, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, because I saw some people trying to defend it. Well, what could they be expected to do? Well, yeah, exactly. They're like, why even be there? Just, you know. If you're just going to stand around and let it all occur, then you might as well not even be there and like not waste the taxpayers' dollars for you just standing around getting paid to be there for no reason.
Yeah, and they don't even have to use force to break things up. Like, you could go in between people and just use your presence, you know what I mean? And try to be a voice of reason.
Well, you could.
But they don't know how to do
that. I was going to say, because, yeah, unfortunately, they could do that, but they don't, because you see this already, because there was a bunch of other rallies that sprung up because of what happened in Charlottesville, like in New York and Seattle and all these places. You know, luckily, I'm not close enough to the city that I didn't have to deal with that stuff. But I saw there was another story I had from that I found earlier that said that, you know, up in Seattle, the protesters were shooting the cops with silly string. And instead of responding, like, you know, you were talking about with reason and stuff like that, they just started firing flashbangs. And what else were they shooting at him, Shay? Like, they were shooting flashbangs and pepper spray. They were pepper spray. So, yeah, all the cops know is force.
Right.
You know, like, that, to me, that's just, that's just insane. Like, it's kind of hard to not understand what a silly string is when it's coming at you. Like, it's hard to mistake it for something else, I think, really, once you actually
see my life.
Yes, exactly. Like, you know, I mean, sure, they didn't pull out their gun and shoot him, but really, pepper spray and flashbang grenades, you know. You know, because that's right up there with, you know, what was it? There's pictures of people standing up against riots, cops with mirrors so they can see themselves. You know, shooting silly string at them is kind of like the same thing to me. It's just like pointing at the ridiculousness of the situation. But they always respond with violence. I don't know, man. Anyway, it's been a good show, guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And for more of us, go to freedombeans.com.
Worms.